Greetings, everyone. I am Isis Coppell, host of Planetary Awareness Network, on the air every Saturday on bbsradio.com. Well, the show is picking up a strong listenership, and every week it's growing stronger. For all of you new listeners out there, this is a show that highlights positive results. Every week we'll have a guest that will speak about the contributions they're making to the planet. Many of them have solutions to the challenges we face. Others are uplifting the consciousness of humanity. But whatever it is, they're helping the transformation of this planet. So I ask all of you to step forth also and take a stand. Many of us have had intense spiritual training already, and some of us are just awakening. But wherever you are on this journey, the time is now. There is no more time. So please know that we're all one. We're all interconnected and interdependent on all life forms, that in the highest truth we've never left the heart of God, and that we must cut through this illusion that we're living in and know that we're Christed beings who are here in this moment to bring the light into this world. So I ask you to step forth and be that Christ, and let's illumine this planet and uplift the consciousness of humanity. We have the power, the talents, and the know-how. And this is how we transform this planet, all together. My guest today is one of those Christed souls, and he heard the call many years ago and took action. And when I put out the request for guests on the show, he stepped up to the plate. His name is Russ DiCarlo. Russ lives in Erie, Pennsylvania. He's a pioneering visionary, a community transformer. He's a soul coach, a seminar leader. He's the author of Towards a New Worldview, Conversations at the Leading Edge, and he also wrote The Definitive Guide to Longevity Medicine. He's currently focusing on facilitating spiritual transformation at the community level and promoting the power of an awakened group consciousness to enhance community quality life indicators. Even Oprah Winfrey has sought him out as a possible guest on her show. So now, on my show, I present to you Russ DiCarlo. Russ, are you there?
I am here, Isis. It's
awesome.
A pleasure to be with you today.
Wonderful. I'm so happy to have you here with us as well. Russ, talk to me a little bit. I know you've had so much experience and are doing so many wonderful projects and things, including writing books. I mean, my goodness, you're just everywhere. Talk to me about the whole process. I mean, you've got these incredible books, and they take so much, skills of higher knowledge. How did you acquire that, and what led you to do your first book?
Well, that project really came out of my own spiritual questing that began probably at a pretty early age. I remember reading the book Psycho-Cybernetics by plastic surgeon Maxwell Maltz when I was 17 years of age, and I think at that time I was kind of looking for additional answers. I don't know that I was really satisfied with what I was learning in school and what society was teaching me. I just felt there was something more, and so that kind of kicked things off. When I was in my later 20s, my spiritual search kind of intensified, and I ended up reading probably over 1,000 books in a 4 or 5 year period.
Wow.
And as a result of that, a whole new world opened up to me.
Yeah.
I was reading, you know, books by, for example, Joan Borisenko, Guilt is a Teacher, Love is a Lesson, and many, many other books along a similar vein. And I was so excited. I wanted to share this information with my family and friends, basically.
Right.
And unfortunately, they were not of the same mind that I was and would never sit down and read the hundreds of books that I did. So I decided to create one book that kind of distilled the watershed information that I had come across. And so I interviewed actually over 50 paradigm pioneers, as I call them, was only able to include 27 in the book Towards a New Worldview. But what I hoped to achieve and what I think I achieved was, in about a 12-page interview with people like Joan Borisenko and Larry Dossey, Stephen Covey, the list goes on and on of the individuals, Gary Zukav, who's been on Oprah himself.
Right.
I just tried to distill their wisdom and their insights in a 12 or 13-page interview and make it more accessible to the average person.
Exactly, right. Wow, that is absolutely phenomenal. So your whole purpose in doing this, what are you trying to accomplish by compiling all this amount of information from all these incredible people, besides making it accessible, what is the goal?
Well, I think at that particular period of time, my goal was to just educate,
yeah,
to provide people with information and allow them to think about themselves, their lives, and the world at large in a new and different way,
mm-hmm,
a more
mm-hmm.
empowering way.
Mm-hmm.
My goals since then have evolved to the point where my main focus these days is not simply to educate, but to empower and help people to spiritually transform themselves.
Okay.
So.
And how are you doing that?
Well, I think methodology then becomes important in practice.
Mm-hmm.
A daily practice becomes important. And what I'm finding is that, taking in information by reading a book is fine, but it's not in and of itself going to change your life.
Right.
I think that's where we have to recognize where we're at and where we could possibly be going if we take a larger view. And what I mean by that is most people, from what I could tell, are kind of engaged and enmeshed in the ego, in an egocentric point of view or egocentric consciousness.
Right.
They have an ego, and that ego is very much focused on its own survival.
Right.
And so if you look at Maslow's need hierarchy, most people are focused on simply surviving,
mm-hmm,
and they've not elevated themselves to the point where they're interested in transcending their own ego.
Yeah.
But that transcendence is absolutely necessary for spiritual transformation to occur.
Right, yep.
And so I think that the way you get from where most people are at, being egocentric, to being soul-centered or spirit-centered, is through some sort of practice and discipline, like meditation, but it goes beyond that, too, from my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that much of this process of personal transformation involves working with the emotional body, and in particular, what Eckhart Tolle would call the pain body, that, through our earthly life experiences, many of us have been traumatized.
Yep.
And it doesn't have to be something very overt. And by that, I mean, one of the traumas that I had to work with at a certain point in my process involved a period of time when I was 5 years of age. I had ear infections at that period of time. And as a result of that, my mother took me into a doctor who was using a tool to kind of like remove some of the wax out of the ears.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I had the same experience. It's horrible.
Did you? And,
yeah.
And as I recall, again, I was only about five. So
yeah, that's the age I was. Amazing.
It was a tool that to me looked like something a dentist would use
that's
to clean
right.
your teeth.
Yeah.
And I remember screaming, and what happened was one of the nurses in the room pinned my one arm down.
Wow.
My mother pinned my other arm down while the doctor was doing his thing, and it was excruciatingly
yep.
painful.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so what I found was, because my mother was a part of this pain, that somehow the subconscious mind, during that event, during that experience, made some associations,
yep.
which I then later had to clear, like maybe, love is painful, or, the mind of a child is not very sophisticated, and will leap to conclusions that an adult would never make.
That's right.
And so I think part of our spiritual transformation process requires that we go back and clear, what I call clear some of this trauma, releasing it, which is a form of density, if you want to, speak in the language of energetics.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
More dense energy that needs to be cleared in order for our consciousness to fully elevate itself and expand.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So these are the kind of things that I've been involved with, helping
Very.
People to heal their emotional past and mm-hmm. to elevate and expand their consciousness.
Now, do you do this, other than obviously writing books and things like that, do you do them like is it a workshop scenario? How do you get these people to see you? Do you have, consultations that you do one-on-one?
I work both with groups and with individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a period of time that I was working with Stairways Behavioral Health, which is a community-based mental health resource in this area, and is highly regarded both here and outside of this region.
Mm-hmm.
And so for 3 years, I worked in their outpatient clinic, and I was taking some of the tools of energy psychology and going in and working with people that had schizophrenia and clinical depression and maybe borderline personality disorders
right.
to help them heal.
Right.
And I was very encouraged by the results that I had obtained.
Wow.
And to me, that kind of illustrated that the tools of energy psychology could be used even for the individuals suffering with the worst conditions. And I said to myself at that time, boy, if this works for these individuals who are having so many problems, what will it do for the average person who just wants to better their own life?
That's right. Yeah, because we're a little bit more ahead,
yeah.
I think, you know. Okay, so you just mentioned this term, energy psychology. Can you expand on that and enlighten us who don't know what that is?
Yeah, sure. Energy psychology is kind of a subset of psychology that's been on the scene for about 20 years now. The father of energy psychology is regarded as Roger Callahan, who's a PhD, who developed a therapy called thought field therapy in the mid-80s.
Uh-huh.
And what Callahan discovered was that by working with individuals with certain clinical problems and having them work with the meridian system, which is a part of the energy system of the body,
uh-huh.
that he could actually help people who were experiencing problems release those problems in a very short period of time.
Right.
He gives the example of this one woman that he worked with named Mary who had a water phobia, and her phobia was so extreme that if she were to even, she couldn't even get into a bathtub and take a bath if there was more than a couple of inches of water in the tub. It just frightened her tremendously.
Right.
So he had been working with her, and at the same time he was working with some individuals who were involved with traditional Chinese medicine. He learned about the acupuncture system.
Mm-hmm.
And just as an experiment, he had her tap on some of these acupuncture points while she was thinking about the water.
Wow.
And he found that when she tapped the point underneath the eye, that all of a sudden her fear started to lift.
Huh.
And she then said, well, because apparently the area that his office was in, there was also a residential area and there was a swimming pool, and she wanted to go to the swimming pool to test it out. And
oh my goodness.
He was quite reluctant at that point in time to have her do that, but she did. She went in the water, and her phobia was pretty much gone.
Wow.
And so from there, Callahan expanded and began to treat people with depression, and he came up with about 50 different protocols, meaning sequences of tapping certain acupuncture points
uh-huh.
in order to help people with very specific problems. So a person with depression would have a different sequence than somebody that had maybe an anxiety disorder.
Wow.
So he's the father. From there, we have Emotional Freedom Technique by Gary Craig.
Mm-hmm.
We have Be Set Free Fast by Larry Nims, and on and on. And there's dozens now of different methods that have similarities within the umbrella of energy psychology. But the basic focus of energy psychology, and the basic premise, I should say, is that in addition to the cardiovascular system or the immune system or the central nervous system, we also have an energy field.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that this energy field does, in fact, drive our biochemistry. And so if we can make changes in the energy field, it will have a measurable result or a significant result in the physical body in hopefully in the direction of improvement.
Do you incorporate any of the maybe aura readings or anything like that in your work, or does that have anything to do with what you do?
Well, most recently I've become acquainted with some extremely sophisticated technology called the QXCI,
mm-hmm.
which is a form of a computerized Vol machine. There are certain machines that have been around for quite a long time now that are able to assess and measure fluctuations in the energy field. And it started out as very simple devices, and now we have very sophisticated computer devices which, in essence, scan the aura and scan the energy field to notice imbalances.
Wow.
And problems in the energy field. So the QXCI, for example, scans 8,000 different measures or indicators
mm-hmm.
of health and well-being, and then it gives a report to the individual to let them know, you know, what's wrong.
Yeah.
And this is quite useful for many individuals who have had severe problems, maybe fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome, that traditional medicine has not been very capable of successfully addressing.
That's right. So is the only way, I mean, I'm asking because I have the vaguest idea, and if I have a problem, you know, if I have a condition that, say, I'm depressed,
mm-hmm.
is the only way to get rid of it is through acupuncture, or is there another way to change the energies in my art field?
Well, I developed a program for Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield a number of years ago called Lifting the Weight of Depression. And this was a whole person program that has the premise that when you manifest an illness in the body, more than likely what's going to be required is a multi-level approach, meaning that, you know, I wouldn't just have an individual tap acupuncture points. I would have them do that, and in addition to that, look to make changes in their diet, maybe introduce omega-3s, essential
right.
fatty acids, for
right.
example, which have been very well researched in terms of helping people with depression.
Mm-hmm.
I would have the individual really limit, if not eliminate entirely, any foods that they might be sensitive to, including sugar, because sugar,
oh, yeah.
in my experience, could propel somebody into a depressed state.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, there's not one thing that I would advise an individual to do. There would be many things that would be then tailored to that given individual.
Right, right. Now, are any of the books that you've written so far, is it to the point that if, for example, one of our listeners wants to pick up a copy and say, hey, listen, you know, I've got this problem. I've got a heart condition. I've got diabetes, or I've got whatever, that, you know, everything would be there to be able to address that, or is there some place else they can go for that?
Well, what I would recommend is my second book, The Definitive Guide to Longevity Medicine,
uh-huh.
was written in collaboration with Burton Goldberg and Burton Goldberg Publishing.
Right.
And he put out a book in the early 90s called Alternative Medicine, The Definitive Guide, a big gray book with red lettering.
Right.
And it sold almost a million copies thus
wow.
far. I was involved with the revision that was made in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
contributing sections on energy psychology and energy medicine. But that is a good first place to start, because the book encompasses a wide variety of illnesses and conditions that then could be treated from an alternative point of view. And the science that's been used in the book, which 400 leading-edge physicians helped to write, by the way,
wow.
It's all scientifically based. And being that I've been in the area of health in medicine, I could tell you what's surprising to me oftentimes is how little traditionally trained doctors know about the information and the insights and the wisdom contained in their own mainstream scientific journals.
Yeah.
They don't have a clue. And that includes nutrition and the importance of nutrition and how certain diseases could be treated effectively with certain nutrients like vitamin C or others, vitamins
right.
or minerals.
Yeah.
But that's a good place to start. And also, Alternative Medicine Publishing put out a series of books dealing with heart disease, for example, or dealing with cancer. Their book on The Definitive Guide to Cancer Treatment was looked upon as a watershed book, and that's been around for a number of years now and has been updated. My book on longevity medicine kind of gives you a glimpse of what you can do to improve heart health or to improve immune system function. How do you detox the body? We cover things like that there.
Fabulous.
So my book...
Do you have a section on losing weight, too?
No, but there is a weight loss
yeah.
book that my publisher has, and
wow.
I've used it for my own community-based weight loss program called Lighten Up Erie.
Wow.
So I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
And if the listeners would go to 10 Speed Press and do a Google search, they'll
mm-hmm.
get to the website that carries all these books, or they could just go to Amazon.com.
Great. And that book, obviously, is still, you know, available. It's not, off the press. I mean,
that's correct.
Okay. Awesome. If a person had any of these type of illnesses along with all the other things that you're, you know, recommending them to do, not only nutrition, like acupuncture and other things, would that also involve... positive thinking, that type of thing, positive thinking and affirmations, and is that part
yeah,
of
absolutely.
Your thing too?
Yeah. Yeah, but what I do is because affirmations, as they're traditionally done, probably don't work, because what I found is that we really have to understand the nature of our minds, and we don't just have a conscious mind, we actually have three minds. We have a subconscious mind, a conscious mind, and a superconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to effectively deal with a certain condition that we have to start looking and plumbing the depths of our subconscious to find out what do we believe, what negative limiting beliefs do we have that maybe contribute to our state of poor health. And so what I teach people to do is I work with muscle testing, applied kinesiology, and I help people identify through muscle testing where you have the individual working with a practitioner who presses down on the arm to try to solicit a response, either strong or weak,
right,
and using that information to find out, you know, what the subconscious mind holds to be true. People
yep.
are oftentimes blown away because, you know, somebody could say to me, for example, well, Russ, I think that, you know, I really do deserve to earn $100,000 a year.
Right.
And I'll say, well, that's nice. And they could be very sincere and honest in their in what they're telling me. But then I'll say, well, let's test it through muscle testing. And
uh-huh.
what I oftentimes find is on a subconscious level, they might not believe they deserve to earn $20,000
right.
a year.
Right, mm-hmm. yep.
So what the conscious mind believes, in my estimation, is of far less importance than what the subconscious mind believes. Some cellular biologists estimate that the amount of information that is being processed by the subconscious mind versus the conscious mind at any given moment in time is along the lines of 4,000 bits of information on a conscious level versus 4 billion bits
oh,
of information
okay.
on the subconscious level. So the subconscious mind is where the action is.
Oh, yeah.
And I teach people then how to download positive beliefs. So oftentimes it's the exact opposite of the negative belief that they hold to be true. So mm-hmm. I would have somebody make the statement that I deserve to earn $100,000 or more a year.
Right.
And I would have them get into a certain posture, which is the whole brain posture. Other people know it as the cook posture. While they keep repeating that statement and maybe envision a scene where they would demonstrate to themselves that they're earning that much money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have people in that scene describe what would they see through their eyes, what would they hear, not only other people involved, what would they be saying, but what would they be saying to themselves silently, and then what would they feel, how would it feel in their body and in their emotions. And that's the most effective way of communicating with the subconscious mind, because the subconscious mind deals with these and is intimately informed by these the senses. And so we have outer senses, we have these inner senses. When we imagine something to be so,
uh-huh.
subconscious mind doesn't know the difference
right.
between that and something that we would call a real experience.
Right, right.
So those are the kind of things I think that it's incredibly important for people to understand and to learn if they truly are committed to changing their lives for the better.
Wow. Outrageous. Just totally outrageous. You're currently working on a group consciousness.
Yes.
Fascinating. Explain that to me in depth.
Okay.
Very exciting.
Incredibly exciting, in my opinion. And,
yeah.
Well, let's step back just a bit. In that recently, within the past half year or so, Oprah Winfrey did a program, a two-part program on The Secret.
Right.
Larry King did a program on it. Ellen DeGeneres, you know, so everybody's catching on to The Secret. And
mm-hmm.
people that I know in my own life who I never would have expected would be interested in that, you know, found it and were profoundly moved by it.
Yeah.
And the basic premise of The Secret is that one of the governing laws of the universe is the law of attraction, that's every bit as effective and profound as the law of gravity. And it's not something that you have to believe in because it's a universal principle. It
right.
works whether you believe in it or not. And the law of attraction says that whatever we intend is what we can attract into our lives.
Mm-hmm.
That what we think, believe, say, and do, these elements of consciousness itself produce tangible effects in our world. They draw to us the people, events, and circumstances of our life.
Right.
And so that works at both the level of the individual and it works at the level of the group. And so the basic idea now in harnessing the power of group consciousness is, what if you had a group of individuals, men and women, who were aligned in vision, purpose, and intention, you know, what kind of effects could they create in the world, or for that matter, in their community?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because there have been several lines of scientific research that indicate that maybe that effect is quite powerful. There's one line of research that was done, for example, with TM meditators, transcendental meditation
mm-hmm.
individuals, And in fact, I was talking to the authors of those studies yesterday, and a man by the name of David Johnson, and there are 51 studies, published studies, most of which are in peer-reviewed journals, that indicate that if you get a group of meditators together in a community, and what they came up with was there is a threshold effect, and that the number of meditators that you would need in order to produce an effect would be the square root of 1,000, or I'm sorry, the square root of
1%. 1%.
So, for example, if you have 100,000 people in a community, as we do here in Erie, that if you got a group of meditators together that only totaled 36, because in this case that's the square root of 1% of 100,000, that those 36 individuals, if they were to meditate twice a day for 20 minutes, would be able to produce changes in the crime rates in the community, in the hospitalization rates of the community, and other measures of community health.
Wow.
So when I found this body of literature, I was extremely excited by it. And I've talked to other scientists and doctors. Dan Benner, for example, has done published a number of different books on the power of healing intention. One of his books came out in the early 90s, and Larry Dossey, who I brought to Erie, is a medical doctor, wrote a book called Healing Words, has appeared on Oprah. He said that these studies that Benner has illustrated in his books could be taken to the bank, in his opinion. They were that scientifically solid.
Wow.
So Benner recently said the same thing holds true, in his opinion, for this body of TM studies in the indicating and suggesting the power of group intention, or group dynamic, group consciousness,
right.
I should say.
Right. Now, are these meditators, do they have to be, from what I'm listening you say, that they don't have to be meditating at the same time, focusing on the same thing. They could be at different points in time, as long as it's 20 minutes a day, right?
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
But at the same time, having said that, I learned, and I've not done TM. I think it's, you know, a great program. I have no problem with it. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi has been extremely influential in the world. Of course, the Beatles were quite fascinated with his work, and his work and ideas kind of informed some of their music.
Right.
Deepak Chopra was highly influenced by Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. So I think that he and his work and TM have been, you know, extremely important in the world today. And from what I understand, that some of the TM meditators will meditate at certain times of the day and thus synchronize with the other TM meditators around the world.
Right.
So sometimes they do synchronize in that fashion. But as far as these studies go, as far as I'm aware at this point, no, they weren't all meditating at the same time in a given community.
Gotcha. And I'm assuming that the effect would be, I guess, what we just did, like recently, on 7/17, on 7/7, where everybody was focusing on the grid and sending, you know, love and all that good stuff to the grid. Everybody's intent was all there, focused at the same time. So I'm assuming that, you know, if everybody's doing it at the same time, it's got to be more powerful than when somebody's, you know, scattered. On different times and different on days.
Yeah, I would say, well, let's put it this way. I think that there's scientific evidence that exists now that's been ongoing for 30 or 40 years that most definitely supports the power of group consciousness, group attention, and group intention. However, we're at the stage right now where it's like planting the flag on a new continent. And even though we know some things, like that in fact there is an effect, we don't know all the variables that would allow an effect to be more or less potent and significant than others. So I say we're in the very early stages of understanding this scientifically, and we have to always keep that in mind.
Right.
I recently was talking to Roger Nelson, who is of Princeton University and was involved with their PEAR laboratory, where they demonstrated over a period of 20 or 30 years that it's possible to influence random number generators through conscious intention, to the point where, if you look at their body of research, it was done, and Robert John was a principal investigator, but Roger Nelson was one of the assistants there. If you look at the body of information and data, you're along the order of trillions to one significance, meaning that, statistically speaking, the significant results that they got defied the odds of trillions to one. So it wasn't just chance occurrence.
Yeah.
In fact, people were able to influence random number generators, which in effect is like tossing a coin. That's the way most people talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like if you were to toss a coin, it's going to come up either heads or tails. What if you intended that it come up heads? And that's the same kind of experiment that they were doing at Princeton, and they found that over time, individuals could in fact influence whether metaphorically the coin would come up heads or tails.
It's amazing.
And so what Roger Nelson has done since then is kind of expanded upon that early work at Princeton,
mm-hmm.
and he developed the Global Consciousness Project, and it's been around for over 10 years now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what he's found is that, and he started out by actually working with small groups of individuals who might be meditating, or they might be in a prayerful state, or they might be doing some sort of spiritual ritual of some sort. He noted that when he brought a random number generator into these groups, that instead of the random number generator spitting out random numbers, which is what a random number generator does,
right.
that this sequence of numbers that came out was more coherent. There seemed to be an ordered pattern to the numbers. And so what he speculates at this point in time is that it's the influence of consciousness itself and ordered consciousness that's achievable through being in a meditative state, for example, that could actually impact the physical world, in this case, these random number generators.
Wow, amazing.
And what he's done is he's gone on from working with small groups to actually having these random number generators spread across the planet itself, and there's about 50 of these generators at various locations on all the continents. And what they found was, well, just to give you an example,
mm-hmm.
September 11th, 2001,
right.
horrible day in our history, he found out that on that particular day, the eggs, as they're called, these random number generator eggs, started to fluctuate in their activity so that they became more coherent at that time. And what's more interesting than that is that this change in activity happened about 5 hours before the event. So what the implication
wow.
is that on some level,
uh-huh.
subconscious level, that the group mind, the collective consciousness, if you will, somehow knew that this event was going to happen.
Wow.
And so the data started to shift and to change. And since then, at the Global Consciousness Project, they've had over 230 events that they've assessed, and most recently the Fire the Grid event that you mentioned
right.
on July 17th. They took a look at that as well to find out, did this particular event have a statistically significant effect in terms of the fluctuation in the activity of these random number generators? And they found that it did.
Wow. Well, it doesn't surprise me. It's just that that's interesting that it's now scientifically proven. That is fabulous.
So I think that we're coming to this juncture in time, and your opening remarks, by the way, were beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Because they so eloquently summarized where we're at right now.
Yeah.
And I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
I think the time is now.
Yep, it is now. That it's there is no more time. We're at the end of our rainbow, and you know, it's up to us to make the change. And, you know, it's people like you and all the projects you're involved with, you know, it's just going to, you know, just even our listeners listening to this program right now, listening to you, are getting so much from this right now. And it's giving them a lot of encouragement also to get up there and do things, you know, and make a difference. Are you familiar with the intention experiment?
Yes, actually, I participated in that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Can
and
you give us an enlightenment perspective here from your, you know, your stories about it?
Well, that's based out of the University of Arizona and Gary Schwartz, working in conjunction with author Lynn McTaggart. And what they've done is they've proposed a continuing series of experiments to demonstrate that a group of individuals holding a common intention could actually produce a significant measurable change in the physical world. And as I mentioned previously, Dan Benor kind of summarized a few hundred studies that have demonstrated that effect, but those studies have been working with much smaller groups and oftentimes just with a single individual. And sometimes the individual that they were studying would be maybe an accomplished healer, maybe a Qigong master, Huh. Other times these studies have focused on individuals who were quite ordinary and
right.
untrained. But there's never really been a study of the effects of a large group of individuals holding a common intention and what that might do in a laboratory setting. And so the intention experiment was kicked off, I believe, in March of this year. And they've done a few of these now, four in total. And just to give you an example, one of the studies, they were looking at a germanium leaf. And they had either one or two others. Two of those would serve as a control, and then there was one that was the active leaf, meaning that was the leaf everybody was to focus their intention on.
Right.
And the intention in that case was to increase the level of biophoton emission from the leaf, meaning that all living things emit these biophotons, these little quanta or packets of energy
uh-huh.
that could be measurable. They could be measured in the lab. And at the University of Arizona, they had that capability. And what they found was that when all the individuals at the very same time, and this was synchronized in terms of all the meditators, all the people doing the intention experiment were gathered and doing their thing at the exact precise same time. And when that happened, that in fact, that little leaf did glow, as Lynn McTaggart says,
wow.
and they were able to produce a measurable change in the biophoton emission. Most recently, they did another experiment with packets of seeds, and this is one that I participated in, and they had three groups of seeds. Two were to serve as a control, meaning we're going to look at these seeds and find out, are there any changes in these seeds compared to the ones that were focused upon through the intention of the group?
Right.
And the idea was to hold an intention that those seeds would sprout more quickly and grow to a greater height than the control seeds. And the results of that experiment have yet to be determined. That experiment itself just took place a couple weeks ago, and I haven't heard anything back on that yet. But just to give your listeners an example, these are the kind of studies that are being done now
yeah.
in laboratories that will at least give credence and credibility. Because The Secret itself, for anybody who's seen The Secret, one of the criticisms of it is it just seems to some people that it's woo-woo New Age mysticism.
Yeah.
It seems kind of flaky to some. And, you know, even though I think that it's quite natural, makes perfect sense to me that
right.
one's intention can influence the physical world.
Sure.
To other people, that's total flaky thinking.
Yeah.
And in fact, what some critics of The Secret will say is that's magical thinking. And magical thinking would be the thinking that a child would have, that their thoughts, their desires would have an effect in the material world. So that a child might think, well, you know, if I pretend that this chair has disappeared, then it's disappeared,
right.
even though the chair is still there.
Right.
So what some critics have said is that the individuals who suggest that your thoughts, your feelings, your beliefs can have an effect in the physical world, if you subscribe to that, you're regressing in your human development mm-hmm. to the stage of that of a child. When, in fact, that's not true at all. And so once we have scientific evidence that, in fact, this can be done, then more and more people will say, well, maybe it is true. Maybe our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions, our intentions, our beliefs count. Maybe we're not powerless victims in life. Maybe we can sculpt our lives the way we want it. And I think that's most important right now because there are a lot of people that I'm aware of that are feeling desperate,
yeah.
hopeless, feeling caught in a trap in life
yeah.
or
yeah.
caught up in a rut and unable to get out. And what this research is saying is that we're powerful. You know,
yeah.
we can change our lives for
that's
the better.
That's right. And if you believe you're caught in a rut and that your life is, not working for you, well, that's exactly what it is because you're bringing it on.
Well, what I like to say, Isis, is that we're so powerful. Our intentions are so powerful that we could believe that we're powerless and it'll be true for us.
Absolutely.
That's how powerful we are.
Yep. We create it as we go along. So we really have to monitor our thoughts very carefully, the conscious one and the subconscious ones if we can, because we are creators and we will be creating our destiny and our demise. So that's exactly what these experiments are proving.
Well, and I've proven it to myself
yeah.
in my own life, and I'm sure you have too, that
yeah.
this really works.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
When it comes to many of the chance occurrences or synchronicities that have happened to me, I could see how it resulted from an intersection of thought and intention. And by that I mean, when I wrote the first book, Towards a New Worldview, I wrote it from the perspective of, you know, I don't want to make a lot of money with this book, or I don't care if I make a lot of money
right.
with it. That wasn't my motivation. My
right.
motivation was, this is exciting information that everybody needs to know about, and if this book could just benefit one person,
there you go.
Then it's totally worth it.
There you go.
And so it took me 3.5 years, and I didn't have any guarantees along the way. I didn't have a publishing contract or anything like that. I just felt the book needed to be written.
Yeah.
And I wrote it, and as a result of that, when I was actually invited to speak to the World Business Academy in Vancouver Island in 96, I believe it was, I was also invited to a dinner meeting with a woman by the name of Connie Kellogg. And it seems that Connie Kellogg had been in a meditation group in Vancouver with a man by the name of Eckhart Tolle.
Uh-huh.
And Eckhart Tolle, she felt, was one of the most amazing men that she ever had met. And she said, you know, his insights and his meditative approaches and his techniques are so important that I want to start a publishing company to publish his work and get it out to the world. And so as a result of our meeting, and she was very impressed and taken with Towards a New Worldview at that time, she asked me on behalf of Eckhart Tolle to write the foreword to the book, The Power of Now.
Wow.
And for any of your listeners who aren't familiar with that book, it's sold millions and millions of copies, was the number one best-selling book in this country mm-hmm. a few years ago.
Yep.
Oprah Winfrey got a hold of it when she received a call from Meg Ryan. Meg Ryan had picked it up in Canada and was blown away by The Power of Now, and she said, Oprah, you got to read this book. Well, Oprah read the book and says to this day it's one of her favorite books of all time.
Wow.
And so it was my intention, though, I believe, you know, to be of service to humanity,
absolutely.
To serve the greater good,
yep.
that led me to this chance meeting that had me write the foreword to the book, The Power of Now, because I think Eckhart Tolle and Connie Kellogg held that very same intention.
That's right. And that's basically it. You need to be coming from that higher place. You know, it's not about the ego. It's not about a self-fulfilling or a self-serving type of attitude about anything. It's basically totally, you know, giving of your talents and of your knowledge, you know, just contributing that to humanity and letting it flow. And the universe has a way of taking care of that, which it did.
The beautiful thing, Isis, is that I attended a workshop when I lived in Atlanta. I lived there for about 7 years. And Arnold Patton was there. He wrote a book called You Can Have It All,
mm-hmm.
which kind of influenced my thinking at the time. He had been on Oprah as well. And he made the comment that you can't give without receiving.
Yeah.
And so what I'm finding is that, because I found that I had to kind of uproot like a martyr pattern or belief system in my own life. And I think that if somebody were to have the attitude, for example, well, I'm just going to be of service to humanity, and they go out there and they neglect all their lower needs, as Maslow determined, and they said, I'm just going to sacrifice myself for the greater good. You know, I don't know that that's a very healthy approach. And what I find is that when you are focused on serving the higher good, that the universe will give back to you.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's not like we just give and give and we deplete ourselves and deplete
right.
ourselves. No, the universe comes back mm-hmm. and creates opportunities,
mm-hmm.
Provides money, resources, does, in fact, satisfy and meet your lower needs.
Immediately. And it brings the people in your life that you need to fulfill that, whatever that mission is, if you want to call it a mission or that that desire to help. I mean, whatever the resources that you need, the universe finds a way to get those people to you, the resources to you, and it's just a magnificent thing to watch and see unfold, because it's that, to me, is almost like it is a law, you know. And I've always seen it happen with me. It's never failed me. And the fact that you're experiencing, and so many millions of people experience it as well, it's just wonderful. And to come from that higher place.
And so oftentimes, our higher good comes to us from left field.
That's right.
It comes from a direction we never could have expected or planned for.
Yeah.
And it just blows you away.
Completely.
For example, the most recent occurrence was 2 weeks ago when a number of different people that I know from around the country were trying to get a hold of me because Oprah Winfrey's producer wanted to get a hold of me, and she couldn't.
Yeah.
And so all these people came searching me out, so to speak, because it turns out that Oprah, because of the fact that she had read The Power of Now, saw my name and saw the book Towards a New World View, and she said she just had the impulse that, you know, I've got to read this book.
Yeah.
And so that was, you know, who could plan for that?
Exactly.
Who could plan for that?
Unbelievable. What destiny has, huh? And what the universe provides for us.
But listen to this, Isis. This is most instructive. It was in the March equinox that I did another 3 other life maps. And for your listeners who don't know what a life map is or a treasure map, it's where you actually let your subconscious mind guide you, well, actually your higher self,
mm-hmm.
your superconscious mind guide you in terms of creating a life vision for yourself. You get a large board, and you start going through magazines, cutting out phrases and images and pictures, whatever seems to grab you intuitively, you place it on that board. And that board might be within the realm of a particular area of your life, might have to do with relationships, for example, might have to do with finances or career. But one of the boards that I did had to do with a project that I'm currently launching called Earthshift 2012, which maybe we could talk about towards the end.
Absolutely.
But on that board, I placed a picture of Oprah Winfrey.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, I just did it spontaneously.
Oh,
and you know why I did it? Because I had seen Oprah's segment on The Secret,
uh-huh.
where she had one of the participants talking. James Ray.
Yeah,
He had said, you know, well, I'm here on your show right now, but I got to tell you, Oprah, you know, he was talking about his treasure map, his life map that he did where he had Oprah on it, you know, 5 years ago. So I said, if James Ray could do it, maybe I can do it.
Yeah,
so I put it up there, and I forgot about it. I just totally forgot about it. And here it was, you know, 3.5 months later where I get a call from Oprah Winfrey's producer. So this stuff works, people. It really works.
And the funny thing is that, you know, the universe or our creator, you know, has a very good sense of humor, too. I mean, I'm listening to you, and it's just blowing me away. It's just phenomenal. Unbelievable. So you did mention the this project, that you, this new world being born. What did you call it, Earthship or something like that?
Well, I've got several projects going on right
okay.
now, one is which is called Earthship 2012.
Okay.
And the whole idea behind that and the premise is that we can use the power of a group focused with focused intention, vision, and purpose, and that group can make a difference not only in the lives of those people who live in a particular community, but even globally as well.
Yeah.
So I think that it's time for groups of people of like mind,
yep.
shared intention, to come together and to start expressing that intention,
yep.
you know, for the upliftment of others. So that's part of it. And the other part of it is really to create some sort of leadership in the consciousness community. We talked a couple days ago on the phone,
mm-hmm.
and what I mentioned was that I felt that there was a vacuum of spiritual leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you don't have individuals who are spiritual leaders. We absolutely have that. But it doesn't seem to me that there's an integration, sharing of information, resources.
Right.
And so that, I think, is one of the goals of Earthshift 2012, to allow spiritual leaders. And it doesn't have to be somebody that's written a best-selling book like Eckhart Tolle. It could just
right.
be, you know, other individuals who are, you know, well on their way in their spiritual journey but haven't made a splash in the larger
mm-hmm.
global sandbox, so to
mm-hmm,
speak.
Mm-hmm. And what do you suggest for these people? How do they step up to the plate? I mean, what do you suggest them doing?
Well, if anybody's interested in Earthshift 2012, first step to take is probably to just send me an email expressing your interest. We're going to have a newsletter. The website's going to be up shortly. So they can do that by sending an email to Russ DiCarlo, RussDiCarlo, @yahoo.com, and I'll put you on our mailing list.
Awesome. Awesome. Very good. Very good. I mean, you've got exactly you know, everything that I requested as a guest. I mean, you're out there. You're getting your, what do we call, rolling up your sleeves, getting your fingers and nails dirty, doing what you have to do to get the consciousness uplifted of this planet. And you know, you're just absolutely phenomenal to me. I enjoyed very much this this talk we've had. You know, and if there's anything that you can suggest to our listeners of how they can get involved besides, you know, just getting involved with your newsletters, and is there anything that you can give them, you know, in terms of an advice as to what they can do to help?
Well, I would say that it's important to join with other individuals, but it's also important to do your own transformational work. And I think that this is an area that trips up many so-called light workers,
mm-hmm.
Those individuals who are trying to add a higher light of consciousness and
right.
love to the planet, which I think is transforming the planet. But what I find with a lot of light workers is that there's a reluctance to do the deeper healing work. So, for example, there might be somebody might have an interest in doing meditation and reaching those higher states of awareness, which
right.
could be quite blissful.
Sure.
They're great to hang out in.
Yeah.
But then you have to come back to your regular earthly life, and oftentimes that's kind of lost. And
yeah.
the reason it's lost is because there has to be healing that takes place at the level of the subconscious mind. And if I could just give a little energy body speak, it has to involve working with the lower chakras.
Yeah.
Meaning that there are certain energy centers in the body, major energy centers, which influence us physically and also psychologically.
Right.
And the lower energy centers have to do with the lower rungs of Maslow's need hierarchy.
Yeah.
Have to do with physical survival, for
sure.
example, and
yeah.
our relationships with other people and our power needs.
Yeah.
Our need to feel that we have power in life.
Yeah. yeah.
And so I think a lot of people have had these early childhood experiences that I alluded to earlier, and they haven't cleared them effectively.
Yeah.
They haven't, you know, really wanted to go there. And in my work, I find that a lot of times when we start doing that kind of work, rolling up the sleeves, that people want to turn tail and run. You know, and the last thing they want to do is going into the shadow self,
yeah.
as Debbie Ford would call it.
We don't like to see that.
No. But that's where the power is. That's where
right.
the liberation is.
That's right.
And our job is really not to go to the light to escape the harsh realities of the
mm-hmm.
physical world.
Mm-hmm.
Our job really is to become a clear channel for God and Spirit, so God and Spirit can work through us.
Yep.
And, you know, some people have said, well, it's kind of like letting God play the flute of your life. You know, in order to do that effectively, has to have access to all parts of us.
Yeah.
Not just the higher energy centers, but also the lower ones.
Well,
so,
I'm telling you.
I think that, you know, doing this emotional healing work is incredibly important at this time. And I would suggest that even if a person resists doing that work, that somehow or another they're going to have to, because, you know, I'm finding, I don't know about you, Isis, but I'm finding in general people are more abrupt, they're quicker to be angry, they
mm-hmm.
seem to be more filled with fear these days,
mm-hmm.
and I think that, you know, these lower, denser emotions are going to come up.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what our opinion is about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
And they're all coming up to the surface now. So, but I couldn't have said it better myself, everything you just you put, you know, and all our listeners. I'm just hoping that you've all paid attention, because even me, I've learned so much from you today. It's just unbelievable. We've come to the end, unfortunately, of the show, and that always happens. It's like, oh, man, it's like time runs out real fast. But I definitely want to see you back on the show at some point, because we could be talking here for hours. You have so much to share. And I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. And to all my listeners, if any one of you think that you're making a difference, or have any ideas or solutions to the challenges that we're facing, please, please, please let me know about you, about your projects, your ideas, your inventions, about your concerns, about anything. You can email me at planetaryawarenessnetwork@hotmail.com. And also, if you know of anyone who's making a difference as well, let me know about them as well. I invite you all to join our message board, where you can learn about the news that is not in the mainstream media, or just join the network and, you know, of Planetary Awareness Network to post your ideas and concerns and to network with other people. You may join at groups
www.msn.com/planetary awareness network. And don't forget to tune in next week at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time when we'll have Brother Sage and Kathy Jones talk about an incredible food source that was discovered accidentally from the sea. The food source is having an incredible effect on people's lives and health. And one of the properties that it has is actually raising the frequency of a person. So these experts will talk about this incredible food source and all these amazing discoveries right here on Planetary Awareness Network. I urge you please to tune in. It's going to be an exciting show. Until then, this is Isis Coppell and Russ DiCarlo wishing you all a very wonderful and blessed day. See you next week.